Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio's Raw Report, a very special Election Day Raw Report. That's why we're a little bit late. We hope you all got out and voted. Don't care who you voted for. Just make sure you get out and vote. Anyway, we will be discussing last night's Monday Night Raw, very interesting Monday Night Raw, for the next hour at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486 if you want to talk to us live, and you can hit us up in the chat room where we can take your questions, your opinions, and your comments there. Folks, the WWE had an awful lot to make up for coming off of Crown Jewel, which literally was a hot, steaming mess of booking. I mean, it wasn't so bad even. Take away the fact that whether you thought they should be there or they shouldn't be there or whatever, this was a steaming mess. From Shane McMahon winning the Best in the World trophy for no other reason than to irritate us, because that's what would be a good idea to have on SmackDown, is a general manager who's a authority figure, who's a heel. Where did we hear that before? To ridiculously short matches with Braun Strowman basically getting squashed by Brock Lesnar, who no one wanted to be the champion, but Vince McMahon insisted they have a high-profile champion. Four guys whose average age ends up being 200, or combined age, I should say, ends up being 200, given an hour for the main event. Raw had a lot to make up for. And in some ways, to be honest with you, they tried. They really did. This Raw, more than anyone that I've seen in probably 2 years, tried hard to finally allow, the heels to be heels. Gone were the, well, I don't, they're not such a bad guy. They're kind of funny. They're kind of cool. They're kind of interesting. They're tough. They're the ones I come to see. And replacing that were heels that actually did things that made you say, yeah, that's not cool. That's fucked up. Which is what you have to do to begin with, by the way. I don't know who hit them in the head and finally told them, look, you can't be playing these games anymore. Your ratings are dropping lower than TNA on Pop. And you better wake up and face reality that not every wrestling fan wants to see two guys who are absolutely neutral fight it out in a pre-planned match where nobody's really a bad guy and nobody's really a good guy. It's just about, look how athletic they are and how wonderful they pull off these moves. No one wants to do that, or very few people want to do that. And I suggest that the people who do want to do that are not wrestling fans. I don't know what they are. Idiots would be a good word. So last night we start off with Baron Corbin in the ring, security everywhere. I guess the idea is he's afraid of Braun Strowman after screwing him over at Crown Jewel. And all the wrestlers, most of them, are up on the stage. And he announces that in Survivor Series, he is going to be the captain of the team. However, he's not going to wrestle. He's just going to be the managerial captain of the team. And I let out a groan because I'm like, oh, God, really? I mean, how's that going to work? You don't even have enough guys to put a five-guy team without guys who want to kill Baron Corbin. He's going to be the manager. But then here comes Alexa Bliss, and she says, well, I'm not going to be able to wrestle either, thanks to her apparent concussion. So I'm going to be the captain of the women's team, which is a little better. I wish she could wrestle, but she can't, so it is what it is. And out comes Kurt Angle. And Kurt Angle basically says, you know, getting back in the ring gave me a taste for this, and I want to be the captain of that team, and I'm challenging Baron Corbin to a match tonight, and if I win, I think I should be the team captain. I really thought this was going to lead to Baron Corbin saying, look, I'll put my team captain status on the line, but if you lose, I'm the permanent general manager. I really thought that's where that was going. But it didn't. He just kind of alluded to the fact that I'm going to be anyway. And he finally told Kurt, fine, you can have your match. Then Braun Strowman comes out and kicks a security guy in the chest for real so hard, I'm surprised that there isn't a footprint on his back. And mauls security a little bit. Doesn't really get his hands on Baron Corbin, but chases him back to the dressing room, and Raw is on. You know, for what it was, it's not the worst opening I've ever seen. It put a decent amount of heat on Baron Corbin. It gave Kurt Angle a face pop. And to be honest with you, it even pushed Alexa Bliss a little bit, even though she can't wrestle. She's going to be the captain of the team, so what is she going to do? Is she going to favor the girl she likes, like Alicia Fox, knowing Alicia Fox is very beatable? Or is she going to favor the girls that she really thinks can get the job done because she doesn't want to lose to SmackDown? So it's a kind of interesting dichotomy there. So, Mike, not a bad start to Raw this week.
Not a bad start. And look, on what Strowman did, yeah, it was a potato. But then again, you know, these aren't real security guards. We know what these guys are. These guys are wrestlers or trainees. So, yeah, he potatoed him and, you know, could see the footprint on his back, but that guy should be able to – I mean, you expect that from a guy who's going to be, quote, angry at the guy who's his supposed boss that he wants to get. And you put somebody in his way, yeah, you're gonna get hit. And you're probably going to get hit really hard, you know?
Yeah, look, there's no question. I'm not calling him on the carpet for giving him a potato like that. I'm just saying that had that been, oh, I don't know, you know, Baron Corbin standing there, he's not kicking him that hard, just between you, me, and the wall. Todd, not a bad opening all in all.
Oh, you're absolutely right. It was not a bad opening. Well, like you said, when Baron Corbin came out, he got tons of boos, and he mentioned about Shane McMahon. They were cheering for Shane McMahon's name when he mentioned
that.
That's
a little weird. Yeah, I don't know why they did that, but look, the bottom line is, you know, and Maniac in the chat room is saying, don't judge it by the UK crowd. No, you can't judge it by the UK crowd because the UK crowd is always hot, but what you can do is you can begin to see how this could trend to all crowds. And this UK crowd was pretty indicative of how the American crowds feel. I think it's just that the American crowds never really get anything major to cheer about or boo over. You know, the top heel was Kevin Owens, who was basically a face. Braun Strowman, who was basically a face. Last night they did a little bit to try to change that. Now, they start off backstage with a rematch from Crown Jewel, which is Bayley, Sasha, and Natty against the Riot Squad. And once again, I'm saying to myself, oh, God, they're out of ideas and they're just going to rehash matches all night. I can't believe we're going to sit through another one of these. Can't believe we're going to sit through another one where the Riot Squad gets our ass kicked because the Riot Squad is already irrelevant. But they do something kind of smart and they caught me by surprise. They have Natty, for no actual reason, saying, I'm wearing my dad's sunglasses to the ring tonight in honor of my dad, which I thought was not a gimmick. I just thought she really was. Maybe half because I was bored with the match, but I really didn't think this is an angle waiting to happen. And much to my surprise, during the course of the match, Ruby Riott slides out of the ring, threatens to break the sunglasses, and then literally does break the sunglasses in half. Now they're not her dad's sunglasses. We all know that. But what I'm telling you is this. That act alone got Ruby Riott more heat than anything she has done since she got here. Spray painting people's dressing rooms does not do it. Whipped creaming people in the face with pies does not do it. Cackling and running around, tipping over trash cans and picking on interns does not do it. This did it. Now, Natty is not the world's greatest actress. So when she's standing there, you know, blubbering, you're like, well, I could see you crying about it, but I don't think you'd break right down on your hands and knees. And I'm waiting for her to scream to the heavens, "Why, God, why?" She didn't have to be quite as dramatic as she was. What would have been really effective, I think, is if she had just sort of froze, and then you just saw that she teared up or whatever. But here's the worst thing about this match. It didn't end. Nothing happened. Natty didn't get pinned. Nobody got, I guess somebody got counted. I don't even know what the end of the match was. The referee just stopped the match. I figured Natty's going to get rolled up for the pin, but no, that didn't happen. She slides out of the ring. The rest of the Riot Squad leave. Sasha and Bayley come over to comfort her, and there's no match. So that was a really bizarre ending to that match. I'm not even sure it's the right ending to the match. But I still say this. Ruby Riott got heat for what she did, and it's about time someone took something seriously and tried to push it as far as getting a bad guy over. Fans can understand. Smart fans say that's not Natty's dad's sunglasses. We know that. It's a given. But in that moment of time, you say to yourself, yeah, that is a fucked up thing to do to somebody whose father passed away. And if Natty's reaction had just a little bit less dramatic, we really could have bought this. This throws me back to the days when, and you can see it, of course, on the WWE Network. This throws me back to when superstar Billy Graham destroyed Chief Peter Maivia's ukulele that was supposedly given to him by his ancestors, and it was whatever, and he broke it in a million pieces over his head. And as Peter Maivia is laying in the ring there trying to pick up the pieces, you can visibly see tears welling up in his eyes, and you say to yourself, yeah, that's not cool. So I do think this was really good, and I think it helped Ruby Riott tremendously, Mike.
It really did. And think about this. I mean, you look at – we said this is probably what should have happened in one case with a lot, we'll get to Elias, but in terms of his guitars and getting it signed by somebody and having the guitar destroyed or whatever, that type of stuff. Now, yeah, crying and stuff didn't work. It would have worked. That type of thing would have worked better with maybe a Charlotte Flair who can cry at the drop of a hat and you buy it as a true emotion, you know. You have somebody come out and cut up a robe that her dad has given her to wear and watch her cry, you know, because
I just wish that Natty had been told, look, when you see her going to break those sunglasses, you just say, don't, seriously, don't. Don't act like you're kidding. Don't say, please, please don't. Oh, no. Just say, don't. I'm serious. Put them down. I'm serious. Put them down. And then when she breaks them, you should just stand there like you're shell-shocked. And they should leave immediately. And then she should just literally stand there like shell-shocked. And the girl should have came over to her immediately and help her get out of the ring where she picks up the sunglasses, and then you can see she's visibly shaken. Or she has a tear in her eye or something. A maniac in the chat room saying they brought emotion into it and that's why it works. Well, that's exactly correct. But the deal is that the WWE is very poor at that. The WWE usually does the opposite. It's like, oh, Seth Rollins breaks Elias' guitar. But Seth Rollins is the good guy. Elias says, this is my favorite guitar. It was given to me by a very famous person. And Seth Rollins stomps it flat, but Seth Rollins is the good guy. They usually fuck it up. This time they didn't. And finally, the Riot Squad has actually done something that's not just something that 9-year-olds do on Hell Night once a year. They didn't toilet paper somebody's trees or egg their car. They actually did something vindictive and nasty. Finally. So I'm going to give that a good grade because I do think that despite the fact it wasn't handled all that well, Todd, it worked.
Oh, you're absolutely right there, like you said. Like you said before, I think she just – if I was Natty, I would just still there, just have like a tear in my eye and not – go ballistic.
She went a little too far with the dramatics. She was trying hard, though. She was trying hard. I'll give her credit. Apollo Crews then takes on Jinder Mahal in a match that I said to myself, I'm actually interested in this. And I'll tell you why I'm interested, because it's a battle of two guys, one trying hard to be on his way up and the other guy falling fast. And I'm thinking, well, this is going to tell me a lot about what they think of both guys. And I was hoping it would be a hard-fought battle that really didn't lead to much conclusion, like maybe a disqualification or a double count out, something that we could say both these guys got a program for the next, you know, month or so against each other, and we'll get to see them more. But instead, they just, no, Apollo Crews wins. Jinder Mahal is a jabron. I mean, a certified jabron, from jabron to champion to back to jabron. Now, they could have handled this much better. A count out, double DQ, whatever the hell it had to be, could have led to a Jinder Mahal Apollo Crews program of maybe 2-3 matches. You know, let him get a little bit of skin in the game first before you decide who the winner is going to be. Don't rush. Don't tell the story so quick. But they did, Mike, and it looks bad for Jinder.
It looks bad for Jinder. And look, ever since he switched, you know, brands, he's been on the way down. I mean, yeah, you can make the argument that they pushed him too far, too fast up on SmackDown, but at least he was moving upwards, you know.
Yeah.
On SmackDown, you know, now he's just dropping like a rock and not showing any buoyancy at all, you know.
No, and see, like Derek is saying, he loves the move because he likes to see a new guy push. So do I. But you know how you push that new guy? I'll tell you how you push him. You don't push him by just, you beat Jinder Mahal. You push him by making him sympathetic in some way. Jinder Mahal and the Singh brothers maul him. It's a count-out victory. It's a clear, you know, nonsense that Jinder Mahal and his boys really did a number on Apollo Crews, but it's really lit a fire under Apollo Crews' ass. And now fans say, yeah, what Jinder and his boys did to Apollo is wrong. Can't wait to see the rematch and see if he gets revenge. That's how you build him. Not just, okay, beat Jinder Mahal. And fans collectively go, so what? So you got to make it mean something. That victory didn't really mean much to fans. You didn't hear a big pop. I thought maybe Mahal would at least attack him afterwards and they would leave him laying there and there would be more to this. But no, it's just that's the way it goes. You know, see you, Jinder. And I just don't think that works that well. I don't think that's really pushing Crews the way Crews should be pushed. I think it would be much better if you stretched this out to be at least a program of sorts, a few matches, something. Give us a reason to care about Apollo Crews is what I'm saying, other than just he won. Give us a reason to sympathize with him, to root for him, to say Jinder did this or that or the other thing, that it was wrong. And I'll be happy with that. Next we have, well, we have some backstage things where Braun Strowman is trying to find Baron Corbin and can't. Announcers can. Staff can. Corbin can't. I mean, Strowman can't. And we have Seth Rollins come out. I've said it before, when the WWE was going through some dark days a few years ago, thank God for Seth Rollins. Because when Seth Rollins comes out, there's a sort of a, I don't know what you want to call it. There's a sort of an aura. There's sort of a feel that, okay, things are picking up. It's weird, but it's the truth. And he's got the tag team championships around his neck. He's got the Intercontinental Championship around his waist. And I'm saying, it's pretty cool, actually. He gets in the ring, cuts a decent promo. And then he's interrupted by Baron Corbin. He's about to give up the tag team belts, I guess. And he's interrupted by Baron Corbin, who says, no, you're not going to give them up. You're going to defend them, and you're going to defend them against the AOP. Now, I got to tell you this. I have never seen in my lifetime, and I have watched a lot of wrestling, I have never seen a team so badly in need of a manager as AOP. When Paul Ellering left them, they were a disaster. Nobody cared. They didn't look confident. They were schlepping around in the ring. They were stumbling over their words on a microphone. They were headed for Jabronville. When Drake Maverick comes out with them, and they just stand there for a minute, I'm saying to myself, God damn, this looks like a real tag team. This looks like a real wrestling tag team. This looks like those, you know, back in the 90s when you read your magazines and you're like, they're on the front cover and they're looking all badass and their manager's a, you know, a punk who you want to see slapped around. And you're like, yeah, this is it. And I'm going to give kudos to someone I normally don't give a lot of kudos to. He's been rubbing me the wrong way a lot lately, and that's Corey Graves, who says halfway through this match, even if they win, they didn't really win. I mean, this is two men against one. What did they win? How do you call that? Do you call that winning? Which is really good because he's normally a bad guy announcer, and he's actually saying, look, this is a little ridiculous. You can't have two guys against one guy. Seth Rollins isn't a tag team. And I got to tell you that the WWE did a brilliant job of giving Seth Rollins just enough offense where you say Seth Rollins is that damn good that he was smart enough to throw one out of the ring, try to pin the other, trying to use his speed, which is what he did, trying to use his speed to counteract them. There was moments where you say, my God, he might pull this off. This was a really good match. But what it did more than anything else in this world is it got the AOP heat. They need heat. They didn't have any heat. They're not going to get heat by beating up Titus Worldwide. They're not going to get heat by beating up Bobby Roode and Chad Gable. They're going to get heat by two-on-one beating the hell out of Seth Rollins and taking the tag team titles. And that's exactly what happened. The bad guys got to be bad guys. We'll gladly take the two-on-one advantage. We'll sell the baby face enough to say, damn, he gave us a good fight, even one two-on-one. But we got him. And that proves to me the WWE is serious about building some heels. So, Mike, I thought this was probably best match overall of the night. And, it went a long way to build heels.
That's right. And look, Drake Maverick reminds me a whole heck of a lot like Joe Gertner, you know, that's who he is. That weaselly little guy that, you know, what was Joe Gertner? Joe Gertner was a guy that was always had a tag team around him, always had, you know, basically the Dudley Boys. The Dudley Boys, for what they were two big guys that were scary guys, you know. And
yeah.
and he was that big little weaselly guy that he wore that neck brace or whatever it was, but you always wanted to see his ass get beat. You know,
though, to his credit, Drake Maverick is not Lio Rush. Drake Maverick pulls off a character where you say he really is making the difference in these guys. He really is the evil genius behind them. He really is the guy who apparently knows what he's talking about, has these guys focused, has these guys vicious and ready to, you know, kill people. He's got them, you know, really straining at the leash. He's the brains behind the brawn. You really get that feeling with Drake Maverick. When I see them walk out together, from their outfits to their entrance to everything, I'm thinking this is an old school tag team. This is the way WWE tag teams used to be when you made stars out of these guys. This is Demolition. This is the Powers of Pain. This is those type of guys. Thankfully. So Todd, I like this too. I thought it was well done.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it was a squash match. He put up a good fight with two guys. Came out short at the end. But like you said, it was a pretty good match of the night.
And that's what they're supposed to do. Is the bad guys are supposed to overcome. The good guy comes up short at the end a little bit because he's outnumbered. Now, adding to the nice ending is hits the ring as Dean Ambrose. Because half of me was thinking, I hope the WWE doesn't pull this thing where halfway through Seth Rollins being on his own, Dean Ambrose shows up, makes the tag, beats the hell out of one of the guys, pins him, says, I ain't losing my tag team title just because I hate you, gives dirty deeds to Seth Rollins and walks out with his half of the tag team belt, because I don't want to see that. That's been done a million times, and I don't want to see it. We hate each other, but I'm going to show up for tag team matches. So I'm glad that didn't happen. And I'm also glad that Dean Ambrose came down not looking like he's crazily going to attack Seth Rollins, but he gets in the ring pretty calmly, takes the microphone and says, "You want to know why I did this? Is that what you want to know?" And Rollins picks his head up and says, "Why?" And instead he gets the dirty deeds again. No answer. There's obviously an answer coming, and it's not going to be a normal one. It's not going to be because you turned on me a million years ago. Something else is coming. And whatever it is, wrestling fans can look forward to it. It's a storyline. It's a branch on a tree. But it adds to the sympathy factor of Seth Rollins, who just lost his tag team belts 2-on-1, and now his former friend and co-tag team champion waylays him yet again. It's another good move. It's another good move. So then we get the Nia Jax versus Ember Moon. And Nia Jax, well, we should say before we get to that, that Ronda Rousey came out. And I warned everybody what was going to happen. And Ronda Rousey starts talking like a bad guy, really, because you're talking about Becky Lynch. And she's saying, "Isn't it cute that Becky thinks she can beat me?" Well, that's what a heel says, Ronda. Who gave you that advice? Ronda should be out there saying, "You know, Becky Lynch was this smiling, happy, go-lucky sort of girl that I really thought, hey, we could be friends. She seemed like somebody I really would enjoy. She's a hard worker. She's a good athlete. I don't know what the hell happened to her. And now she's talking about breaking my arm and everything else. I don't know what the hell's going on with her. But I will tell her this. If you want to break my arm, you're going to find that harder to do than you think." I mean, that's all she really has to say. Instead, she comes off like a heel. "Oh, isn't it cute that you think you have a chance against me? Isn't it cute that you really think you could beat me in a million years?" This is the same girl who last week said, "I'm not just another pretty face." She's got to watch it a little bit. She's got to watch what she says. She can't get too carried away. She's got to get the sympathy of the fans. She did not. She's going to get booed out of the building against Becky Lynch, because she has now made Becky Lynch even more of a face. Now fans are even more saying, "Oh, so Ronda thinks it's cute that some low-life, quasi-pretend champion like Becky Lynch could ever hope in a million years to beat her." Because that's kind of what she said. And I'm just wondering who's giving her that advice. Because if I'm backstage and I know how popular Becky Lynch is, I say to Ronda, "You can't go out there with fire in your eyes and talk bad about Becky Lynch. You got to talk good about Becky Lynch. You got to say everything, you know, that I've ever known about Becky Lynch I admired. But I don't admire this. I don't admire a girl who has to, you know, dress up as a fan in the audience and back jump somebody. And I certainly don't admire a girl who for no reason at all says she's going to break my arm because she just doesn't like me for some reason. I don't even know her." That's kind of what she should have done. Unfortunately, she didn't, Mike, and she come off looking like a heel.
She did, and look, that whole segment put it in the back of my mind that they're gonna turn her, and they're gonna put the Four Horsewomen thing back together again, because the other three girls are heels. You know, there's no arguing.
That could be on the horizon.
You know, and if you're gonna turn her heel and put them back together, that's a branch on a tree. And yeah, it doesn't make sense for them to do that because they may have wanted her as a face, but if the ultimate plan is to put the two groups back together, then you're gonna have to do that at some point.
You are gonna have to. I'm against it though. I'm against it. I'll tell you why. Because I want to see Shayna Baszler, Ronda Rousey, and I don't want to see it as friends. Anyway, before we get to Nia Jax, I guess we had Dolph Ziggler come out and give his speech on how Shane McMahon's an idiot or whatever it happened to be. And then here comes Elias, who got a Hulk Hogan-type reaction. Elias blew the roof off the building. And I told everybody from about the second week he arrived, you got something here. If you milk it right, you play him as a heel until it's time to go and then switch him, you're going to have a major face. But Elias, as much as I like Elias, and he's one of my favorites to watch, Elias has a problem. And somebody better tell him, because if they don't tell him, it's going to cost him his big push. and that is Elias is boring in the ring. Somebody's got to light a firecracker under his ass. If you can't have a good match with Dolph Ziggler, you can't have a good match with anybody. You know the old saying, Dolph Ziggler could have a match with a broomstick, and it would be an entertaining match. Well, Elias was a broomstick last night. He acted like he just woke up. He's slow. He's plodding. All of his moveset is headlock, armbar, body slam. He's got to pick up the pace a little bit. And somebody's got to tell him that. His matches have got to be more exciting because right now is the time, Elias. You've got the fans by the balls. The fans love Elias. Elias is their Stone Cold Steve Austin, but when Stone Cold got in the ring, he started whooping ass. He was going, 90 miles an hour, kick, kick, punch, punch, stomp, beat you up, whip you to the ropes, clothesline, go out, grab a chair, all kinds of things. He was a perpetual motion. Elias looks like he's in slow motion. And again, if you can't have a good match with Dolph Ziggler, then you can't have a good match. So somebody better put a bug in Elias's ear and tell him you better start training for a little cardio. If that's what the problem is that you're getting worn quick, then you better train some cardio, my friend. Even if it means dropping a few pounds, because the bottom line is you have got it. You've got the WWE in the palm of your hand right now. But you've got to put off some matches that people say, that was a damn good match. If you can't do it, then you're not going to be the next big thing. See, Shawn Michaels could do it. Bret Hart could do it. Then The Rock, Triple H, all of them guys could do that. They had the charisma, same as you. But then when push came to shove and they got in that ring, they could put on a really good match. You're missing that part of it. And that's the easiest part. You just got to get your moveset together and do a better match. Watch those matches back and say to yourself, yeah, I look slow here. Yeah, I look, my moveset has too many boring rest hold type moves in it. I got to pick up the pace. I got to string together two or three good moves. Yeah, he came off the top rope, but you got to do a couple of more things than that. But still, what a ovation for Elias, Mike.
I mean, yeah. Anytime they go to London, in the UK, they're gonna get that type of crowd. But this was far and above what anybody else was getting, even Seth Rollins.
Right.
I mean, there were times during when he came out to play his guitar that he had to physically stop and wait for the fans to stop before he carried on.
Correct.
And you don't see that anymore. You don't see that where a guy has to stop and wait for the ovation to die down and then carry on what he was doing. They've got something with a lot.
Do you agree with me that he looks slow in the ring? Do you agree?
Yeah, he looks slow. We saw that when he did his deal, when he did his several matches with Seth Rollins. They're about maybe Seth Rollins is a little bit smaller than him, but they're about the same size, and Seth Rollins was boom, 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 and he was plodding and slow and this, that, and the other. And this was at the beginning of his ascendancy, to where he is.
Yeah, Elias may be a little muscle-bound for his own good. Elias may want to think about trimming down a little bit. If it's causing him that kind of cardio where he can't go in the ring, where it takes him an extra second or two to get up off the canvas, or it takes him a little time to recover, or he needs that much rest holds in a match, he may have to start training for a little bit more cardio, because you put him and Seth Rollins together and one's thick. They may be the same height or around the same whatever, but he's way thicker. And he don't need to be a high flyer by any stretch, but he needs to be able to pick up the pace. Bobby Lashley moves better than Elias. And Bobby Lashley is so muscle-bound, he looks like a cartoon character. So there's no excuse. And Elias has got to understand, he's got to pick up the pace. And now is the time, because he's on fire. And I want to see him succeed, because he's one of my favorite wrestlers, but I don't want to see him do boring matches. Because I know where that's going to lead him. That's going to lead him to 2 or 3 months of getting pushed, and then he's back to the Jinder Mahal syndrome. which is what happened to Jinder Mahal. Jinder Mahal did a few unimpressive matches, and the next thing you know, you're eating it to Apollo Crews. So Elias better take a good hard look at Jinder Mahal and realize if you're not going to put out in the ring, if you can't put out, the WWE is not going to keep pushing you. And again, Dolph Ziggler is not a guy. If you're in there with, you know, Apollo Crews, you say, well, all right, they didn't put on a great match. Or you're in there with Jinder Mahal, okay. You're in there with Dolph Ziggler. You're expected to put on a good match. And that was not a good match. But Todd, what an ovation.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. He got a tremendous ovation last night. He had that Hulk Hogan cheering thing, and
it really did.
You said, when the fans singing "Walking Elias," that was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was amazing, really. I mean, the WWE had to be smiling like the Cheshire Cat, saying we caught lightning in a bottle again. But then they probably weren't smiling too much after that match was over. Please, Elias. If somebody knows Elias who's listening to this show, put a bug in his ear. You can't put any more matches on like that, Elias. You got to pick up the pace. Lay off the bulky weights and go in for some, cardio, if that's what the problem is. But you got to pick that pace up. Nia Jackson, Ember Moon, again. And God, after she wins, here comes Tamina Snuka again. And I'm saying to myself, here comes the expressionless Tamina Snuka, who looks like a robot that somebody just wound up to walk to the ring. And she just stares again at Nia Jax. But this time, Nia Jax watches her literally give a Samoan drop to supposedly her friend. And then, to nobody's surprise, tells Tamina Snuka to turn her over. And she gives her a leg drop or two, and she's a heel. And I guess the faction now is Tamina Snuka and Nia Jax, the two of Samoan descent, related. And that's supposed to present a huge problem for Ronda Rousey because Tamina Snuka will be at ringside. I guess this is the best thing you could do with Tamina Snuka, because really she just doesn't have it. Probably the best thing you could do with Tamina Snuka. And I guess it's the best thing you can do for Nia Jax, but the bottom line of the situation is, for God's sakes, please then. Please, please, please keep her this way for a couple of years. I don't want to see the crying, I was body shamed and I'm so, and I can't beat a 5 foot tall girl. I don't want to see that one. You already destroyed her. That destroyed her. Now you're trying to build her back up. See, that's what bothers me. You never should have destroyed her that way to begin with. And then we believe all this. We believe that Ronda Rousey's in for trouble. We've already seen her tap out to Ronda Rousey. We've already seen Alexa Bliss kick her ass. So, you know, now you're trying to build her back up like she's unbeatable again, and she's a mean powerhouse. Well, you've already kind of washed that under the bridge, but at least it's something. At least she did something bad. She turned on her friend. Oh, my God, Ember Moon has a feud. It's been how long? How long has Ember Moon been here without a feud? She finally has one. Thankfully. Apparently it's one she's going to lose. But at least she has one, Mike.
At least she has one, and that's the thing. Now, I just want to say, and we'll get to him in a while, because he was on the show. But even going back to Elias, even, and you mentioned what's his name, Apollo. Even Apollo's about the same weight as and almost the same thickness as Bobby Lashley, and even Apollo Crews can pick up the pace a bit and wrestle fast, you know.
Absolutely, that's why I'm saying I'm not cutting Elias any slack. He's one of my favorite performers, but I'm not cutting him slack. That was a terrible match. Can't be a fan favorite. You can't expect the crowd to be invested emotionally into your matches when you give them matches like that, because they won't be. They just won't be. Let's get on to Bobby Lashley and Finn Balor, because, again, this is another rehash of a match nobody wants to see. But Leo Rush has made a huge difference in Bobby Lashley, who no one gave a damn about until Leo Rush showed up. The internet is filled with Leo Rush is actually annoying for real. And that's about the best compliment you can possibly give a professional wrestler. He is extraordinarily annoying. And that's exactly what he's supposed to be. So he's doing his job times 10. He's annoying. He's obnoxious. And people want to see him get knocked on his ass. And you will note that when Finn Balor did knock him down, that got one of the biggest pops of the night. That means he's doing his job, folks. They're letting Leo Rush be the heel. And he is a heel in a different way. He is not like Drake Maverick. Drake Maverick is a little guy, but he's a little guy who's devious and smart and articulate and can light a fire under his men. On the other hand, they're portraying Leo Rush as an obnoxious little twerp who just runs his mouth and runs his mouth and runs his mouth and my friend Lashley. It's really annoying. He brings nothing to the table. He's not supposed to be a great strategist or an evil genius or anything else. He's like a cheerleader. He's like the nerd in school who made friends with a bully. And now he's poking all of the guys in school saying, I dare you to take a swing at me because my friend's the bully. That's who Leo Rush is, and he's doing it well. Really well. And as far as the few people who actually wrote to me and said, they're treating Finn Balor so badly, what the hell are you talking about? He's beat Bobby Lashley twice. So he lost to Bobby Lashley. He should have been carried out on a stretcher. And that would have furthered Bobby Lashley a lot more. At least he lost, but he should have been carried out on a stretcher. Finn Balor's been treated more than fair. It's his time to lose. If you're going to ever promote Lashley, now's the time. Lashley didn't been doing nothing but losing. So, yeah, I'm really happy with Leo Rush, Mike, and I think he's doing an excellent job, and it's making me interested in what Lashley's going to do.
You know who Leo Rush is? Leo Rush is Jimmy Hart. That's who he is. I mean,
little Jimmy Hart,
Jimmy Hart
little
and
Harvey Whippleman.
You know, Jimmy Hart with the megaphone and how annoying that was. You know, and he's standing outside screaming through a megaphone at the guys in the ring. And you're saying, I just want him, somebody to break that megaphone and put him in the hospital or something like that. You know, that type of stuff. That's who he is. That's you want to see somebody take the microphone and hit him over the head with the microphone. That's what you want to see happen. And that could be coming because I still say the ultimate goal is to have Finn Balor and Leo Rush in a feud.
You know, it probably is, but I want them to watch that very carefully, and here's why. As much as I'd like to see that match, and I know what Leo Rush can do. I've seen him live many times. I don't want to see Leo Rush be great. Because if Leo Rush gets in that ring and he holds his own with Finn Balor and he does all of his moves, fans are going to start saying, oh, he's really cool. He's great. You see that guy? He's awesome. And then they're not going to boo him anymore. They're going to say he's awesome. They're going to say, what an athlete that guy is. He's awesome. You see all those moves he does? So you got to be careful of that. Be very, very careful of that, WWE. If you want to keep him this obnoxious little twerp who has to hide behind Lashley, do not show what a great athlete he is, because if you do, you're going to do so at your own peril, because it's going to ruin that character. I'm telling you, it's going to ruin that character. But I enjoyed it, Todd. I think that Leo Rush is doing a great job of getting Lashley over.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like Mike said, he reminds me of a Harvey Whippleman, a Jimmy Hart, and Slick all in one.
And Slick.
In that.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah, he's mashed into all three of them. So Baron Corbin takes off. He doesn't want any part of the fact that Braun Strowman is around. So he takes off, and instead Drew McIntyre is going to take on Kurt Angle. Now, this is my favorite match of the night. It's not the best match of the night, but this is my favorite match of the night, and here's why. Because they bluffed out the master. I'm considering myself the master. I know. I'm very humble. The reason they bluffed out the master is this. Halfway through this match, I said to myself, they're not going to put Baron Corbin as the Survivor Series captain. So you know Kurt Angle's winning. Two, when he starts giving Kurt Angle this nonsense about, go ahead, here's my leg, tap me out. Go ahead, tap me out. You're past your prime. You can't do it anymore. And Kurt keeps trying, and he can't do it. I said to myself, he's going to do it the third time. Kurt's going to grab his leg. He's going to force him to tap out, and then Drew's going to hang on to that. Well, I basically let him. I was stupid. I shouldn't have done that. I underestimated him a little. And that is going to ruin Drew McIntyre for a 50-year-old Kurt Angle. And I was sure it was going to happen. So sure that when it did happen and he grabbed his leg, I'm like, God damn it, here we go. They're going to do it. Or maybe Baron Corbin will run out of nowhere and he didn't really leave. Something will happen. Braun Strowman will come down and there'll be a big brawl. Instead, he gets out of it. He gets out of it and he starts talking to Kurt, telling him, you're past your prime. You're a disgrace to your family. You're a disgrace to the WWE. You've lost it. You don't have it anymore. And he gives him his own angle slam, adding insult to injury, and then uses the ankle lock to tap Kurt Angle out. Literally tap Kurt Angle out. Now, a lot of people are saying to me, man, that was sad to watch, man. You know, that's effed up what they did to Kurt Angle. No, that's wrestling, my friends. Kurt Angle is not the future of this federation. And Drew McIntyre was getting far, far too many cheers. Far too many. As witnessed, when he came out with the Finn Balor thing and held up Finn Balor, fans were more than willing to cheer him until he kicked him in the face. They clearly want Drew McIntyre as a major heel. And last night, they cemented that. No one who watched that thinks Drew McIntyre was cool or tough or fun to watch or entertaining or witty or comedic. The people today are talking about, yeah, Drew McIntyre really gave Kurt Angle the business. That was uncalled for, you know, called him all kinds of names, disgraced him, kind of humiliated him in the ring. Kurt Angle's just been humiliated. Absolutely humiliated. Yeah. Well, guess what? A bad guy did something bad. Wow. It's about time. Because now people will say, well, you know what? I hope somebody kicks Drew McIntyre's ass. I don't know who it's going to be, but I hope it's somebody. Kurt Angle doesn't give up. Maybe Kurt Angle can work his way onto the team or something. Whatever happens, happens. But I can tell you this. Drew McIntyre took a great step forward. So let's just recap this Raw. Ruby Riott took a great step forward at being an actual heel and not just an irrelevant juvenile delinquent. So that's good. Baron Corbin took a step to being a decent heel instead of just Stephanie McMahon's bitch. So that's good. The Authors of Pain took a huge step forward of being a monster tag team and heels that nobody likes. That's good. Dean Ambrose took a big step forward of Dean's no longer cool. Dean's a prick. That's good. Nia Jax tried her best to be a heel. I don't know whether it's going to work or it's not going to work or anybody even cares, but for the effort, I'll say that's good. Ronda Rousey blew it, but hey, she got some bad advice on what to say to Becky Lynch. Leo Rush and Bobby Lashley went a little bit farther toward being really annoying heels that you want to see get what's coming to them. And Drew McIntyre did an excellent job of being the type of heel that you literally say, well, I want that guy to get his ass kicked. This is what wrestling's supposed to be. And, oh, by the way, if Elias had to put on even a 2-star match, he might have been the top face in the company today. That's my biggest takeaway. Somebody's got to get a bug in Elias's ear because he's got the world by the ass right now. And he can't blow it with these half-assed matches. But everyone took a big step forward. Everyone did. Who were supposed to. Apollo Crews got a little bit over. He could have got more over if they gave him a little longer feud with Jinder Mahal. But the heels are finally the heels. The bad guys are the bad guys, finally. This is what we've been calling for I don't know how long. So despite the fact that I don't think there was a really excellent match on Raw all night, I'm still going to give this a pretty high grade. Because excellent match or no excellent match, they have finally let the bad guys be bad guys. And a couple of pieces of news before we give our rating. Triple H indeed is undergoing surgery for a torn pec. Forget WrestleMania for Triple H. At 30, it takes 3 months. At 50, I don't know how long. A long time. Don't know what Alexa Bliss's status is. No idea. Hopefully she'll be okay for right after the Survivor Series. We'll see what ends up happening. And Brock Lesnar, by the way, is going to be fighting AJ Styles in a rematch that maybe some people want to see. I particularly don't because I know they're going to let Brock Lesnar get over. And Seth Rollins is going to fight Nakamura, and I am going to be front and center for that. Because if there's one thing in this world that I do know, it's that while Nakamura is not my favorite wrestler, and Seth Rollins isn't my favorite personality outside the ring from everything I've been told, I have a lot of respect for both of those guys that they refuse to put on a bad match. They're just not going to do it. I don't care if the WWE orders them to go out there and play patty cake. They're not going to do it. That's going to be a barn burner of a match. That's going to be an awesome match. So I'm a little bit revved up for the Survivor Series because I'm saying to myself, we got something going on here. The bad guys are finally the bad guys. They're finally acknowledging, look, Brock Lesnar's a part-time champion. He's a joke. Everybody knows he's a joke. And I hope AJ Styles really builds that up and says, look, I'm the only champion here. I don't give a damn what Brock Lesnar has to say. It's not the champion. Champion of what? Showing up once in a blue moon and getting paid a boatload of money? He's a champion of that. That's about it. I'm really looking forward to SmackDown tonight to see if they can do as good as Raw as far as rehabbing some of their bad guys and getting their ducks in a row for the Survivor Series, because I do think Raw did a good job of that. So for that reason alone, I'm surprisingly going to give this Raw an A-. I thought about giving it a B+ because, of course, Elias shit the bed in his match and disappointed the frig out of me. And there really wasn't an A+ match on this show, or even an A match on this show. But for all the hard work they did to build up these heels, where I'm really starting to see now heels that I can get behind and say these are bad guys that I want to see beat, I'm giving it an A-. Mike, what do you think?
I'm going to give it an A- as well. And look, there's a little detail that we didn't talk about, and that the whole segment, the whole thing with him just getting away from Braun Strowman and Braun Strowman just looking at his hands.
Yeah.
That was a big deal. That his big deal is you're going to get these hands, and he's just that close to giving Baron Corbin these hands, but Baron Corbin gets away. That was a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of it. I thought Baron Corbin was going to get into a program with Elias. I don't know why that ended immediately, but okay. And I don't think there's a fan in the world who thinks Baron Corbin stands a chance against Braun Strowman. So that's another negative, maybe. But, yeah, at least it's that. Todd, what's your rating?
I got to go with you guys. I got to go with an A-.
Okay, so that's not too bad. Derek's asking, how bad does a DVR impact ratings? Well, it does have some impact. And it has an impact that you can watch it anytime you want, you know, on Hulu and other things. It certainly does have an impact. But DVRs existed last year, and Raw was drawing 2.8 million, not 2 million. When you lose 800,000 people, you can't blame it on a DVR. DVR existed when you were doing 2, 8, and 3. So that's not what's causing it. What's causing it is there was no one to root for, and there's no one to root against. As Maniac in the chat room said, there was no emotion in wrestling anymore. It was all about cheer for who you want to cheer. Nobody does anything bad. It's just this guy and this guy. Go for it. Everything was Jinder Mahal, Apollo Crews. Even the main events was Jinder Mahal, Apollo Crews type things where there's nothing invested in it. Now they're beginning to realize we got to get these fans emotionally invested. Why does Ruby Riott and Natty hate each other? Well, Natty's father died and she wore her sunglasses to the ring and Ruby Riott broke them. Okay, well, that's a damn good reason. You know, things like that. Why is Kurt Angle, in the mood he's in? Well, Drew McIntyre humiliated him in the ring and told him he was nothing. That's an Olympic gold medal winner and a champion. And he tried to make a comeback and was basically humiliated and treated like garbage. Oh, well, that's a pretty good reason. It's finally happening. The WWE is finally waking up and saying, wait, we don't really have any bad guys that do anything bad. It's time to really break it out. And they broke it all out in one show. Let's hope they continue it. And let's hope SmackDown does just as good of a job. Because I really felt for the first time in a while that I was like watching the old WWE. I'm sitting there watching it saying, yeah, that's a heel. That's what a heel would do, all right. That's a face. Yep, that's what a face would do. The heels didn't do anything cool. The heels weren't right. They didn't have a reason for doing what they were doing. They weren't justified. They were just being heels. That's what it's supposed to be. It's not hard. I can't believe it took the WWE this long. Mike, I think you gave your rating, but give it again. I didn't hear.
A minus.
Yep. So A-. We all agree, Mike. It was a pretty damn good show, Mike.
It was a pretty damn good show, and I want to see, you know, if SmackDown tonight can be what this was. I mean, we know the whole thing about AJ Styles and the house that AJ Styles built. They kind of let that slip a little bit, but I want to see if they bring in Nakamura and allow him to be the heel that we know he can be. I want to see that. I want to see if they can rebuild some of these people. I want to see if they can take Becky Lynch and make her more, And I want
to, Mike, it's also a good thing when Raw actually makes you look forward to SmackDown instead of saying Raw was terrible, so I hope SmackDown at least picks things up. You're saying Raw was great. Let's continue this. It's been a while since we've been able to do that, Mike. It's been a while that Raw actually made me look forward to seeing SmackDown. We'll see. We'll see what they end up doing, and we'll be back here on Friday to let you know what we thought. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you then.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Wrestling Chat Radio is a Savage Blade production.